Let's do it. Yeah.
Yo, what up? Welcome to Free Refills Podcast, where we come together as youth leaders to discuss the realities of leading in youth ministry. Our hope is that you leave refilled, refueled, and re-energized to carry on in youth ministry. I'm your host, Boss. I'm joined by my co-host, Dusty.
Yes, sir.
And Nick.
How's it going?
Each month, we will have a special guest join us in our conversation. And this month, we have Tim Eldred with us. So Tim, we're so excited you're with us. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you're located, how long you've been in ministry, all that sort of stuff, whatever you want to share.
Happy, what is it, Thursday? Happy Thursday morning. So I'm in Michigan today, which is where my home is. And so I'm glad to be home. I'm gone a lot. As most of us who do ministry for a long time find ourselves traveling way too much. So I came home from Alaska a couple days ago and training some youth leaders, trying to encourage them, and came home to colder than Alaska. When I left, it was 50 below wind chill. And it was nice to go to Fairbanks and Anchorage just to warm up for a bit. And so I come home to a half inch of ice and another foot of snow. So that's where I'm at today. So I'm glad to be talking to you guys. So I'm not outside shoveling or plowing or throwing ice. But yeah, you know, I've been doing this youth ministry thing a while. And next year will be 30 years of full-time ministry. And
wow,
awesome.
Working with youth. It was never a stepping stone. I hope to do it for 30 more years if I'm lucky enough to live that long. And I love it. I love it as much today as I did the day I began. And I can't imagine doing anything else.
That's incredible. What about your family?
Two sons and that are 20 and 23 right now. And been married to my wife Cindy for 29 years this year.
Nice.
She's a public school teacher and she holds our world together. And every time I fly home, she reminds me, you don't live here. Do not mess up our routine. And, matter of fact, she calls Delta the name of my mistress. So Delta Airlines. And people find it funny. They wonder how we do it. It just works. We've learned to manage, you know, 150 days on the road together. And while she stays home and holds down the fort, and I mean, she is the rock. She is the rock and the CEO of the Eldred home. So
I think
that's awesome.
I think that's a shout out to all wives in youth ministry in that moment, right?
Yeah.
There.
All spouses, right, who have to put up with crazy nights and kids at your house and weekend retreats and lock-in, and then the results of lock-ins the next day, which is usually diarrhea, you know. So
why I don't do lock-ins
is why we have interns do lock-ins, right, or don't do them at all. So
spouses are definitely the real MVP of youth ministry.
Yes, they are.
So yeah, so Tim, that we appreciate that. We're gonna have us a little bit of fun before we jump into our topic. So we've developed some questions that we usually just try to have some fun with our guests. And so hopefully none of these, I don't think you're the guy that takes offense and things. So I wrote some pretty hard ones then.
All right.
So if you had to pick one thing that you just would not be good at, and say, you know, and I think we're gonna change this on the fly. We brought up our wives, right? So if you had to say one thing that your wife said that you were not good at, what would it be and why?
Well, my wife would say that I can't find my butt with both hands. which is a testament of my lack of administrative organizational skill. You don't want me to plan anything. So I'm really good at lighting people on fire and casting vision and getting you all hyped up, but I'll watch you burn, man. I won't tend the fire. And so creating a strategy and a plan, I drive my wife, my team, my staff crazy. So you would never hire me as a chief operations officer or an executive pastor role, because people would quit.
Oh,
Yeah, that's it. That's an easy one. Come on, you got a better question. Okay,
well, in defense, when I was writing this, I was kind of funny. I thought you were going to go a different direction with that because my wife would tell me that I can't find, like, I'm terrible at locating anything when it's usually right in front of me. And I'm just like, I can't find whatever. I can't find the TV remote or whatever. I can't find the kid's binky. And it's like sitting right in front of me or I'm sitting on it. And so, yeah, she's
it's the same. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
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 All right. So,
go ahead, Nick.
Okay, so what's your we'll go a geeky question then a non-geeky question. The first one would be what's the best Star Wars movie out there?
Oh gal. You know, I do love the Star Wars series. The best one. I've seen them all multiple times except some of the newer ones. I could tell you the worst. I think the worst ones are when I don't even know the name of them, so I guess I don't love them that much. But in the last 5 years, some of the acting has been absolutely terrible. So I would take the first three over the last few.
Wow, yeah. That's a rare statement.
Well, I mean, the technology and the
scene. Oh, wait. Are you saying first three as in episode 1, 2, and 3 or 4, 5, and 6?
No, I'm sorry. The old ones, episodes 4, 5, and 6.
You scared me for a second.
4, 5, and 6. You know, classic actors, terrible CGI, but so much better acting than whoever they got for the last three we watched. So,
all right. And then what's your favorite sports team that you follow or maybe – don't follow?
Well, somebody has to cheer for the Detroit Lions. And so now that I love them, because I really don't even enjoy NFL football that much. I'm a college guy. So you've got to cheer for the Lions if you're from Michigan, because it's just, if not, no one else will. But I have a house divided. So I have one son who's a U of M fanatic, and the other one, because Big Brother loves the Wolverines, he hates the Wolverines. So he's green and white. He's a Sparty fan, but if push comes to shove, I will always go blue. I will always go Michigan, basketball, football. And so those are my two biggies as far as, you know, teams and team sports. But I'm an NCAA guy, not an NFL or NBA or MLB guy. I still like the amateurs. Even though I'm not sure they're, you know, quite amateur, but still.
Well, we can have that topic.
Yeah, I prefer them over people. So.
Well, I'm as a former college football player, I would. We can have that conversation at the time. But yeah, so the next thing would be what is something about you that is true but when you share it with someone, no one believes it. So like my thing is, I just said I was a college football player. Yes, but I also did cheerleading, and so I'm a big 6'3", like 245-pound dude, and everyone's like, there's no way you did cheerleading. So no one ever believes me when I say that. So what is something about you that is true but no one ever believes?
That's a great question. I think they're shocked when I tell them that I studied jazz, ballet, modern, and tap dance for 4 years.
Nice.
Went to college on a full ride for theater and dance.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
That is awesome.
I do not look good in tights. You know? So that's why you give it up. You give it up when your tights are just too tight. Yeah, that's when you give it up.
All right. Well, good to know. All right, next one. Car, desk, or your room, what do you clean first and why?
Oh, I'm a little bit OCD. I mean, I might not be organized, but I organize my chaos. So my desk comes first because unfortunately that's where I spend the majority of my time. My car comes a close second, and you could typically eat off of it, and I wash it a lot. And then my room. Yeah, I think my wife hangs up more clothes than I do. Of mine in my room. Yes, true.
Fair enough. All right. So because it's Free Refills podcast, we have to ask a drink question. So favorite soft drink. Are you a soft drink or Coke or Pepsi, or do you drink pop at all?
I am not a pop drinker, man. If I have to have a soda. I will drink a Coke. Never Diet Coke. I don't know what that stuff is, but I prefer things that takes rust off nails, so I would drink a Coke.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring that up. Fun fact, I went to the doctor one time for laryngitis, and I was like losing my voice, and he told me to drink Coke until it went away. So just to constantly drink Coke because it would pull all this like the nasty mucus like that was on my vocal cords. It would pull it all off.
Good to know. Like, that's a great life hack.
Yeah, there you go. Life hack. That was extra for any of you that are listening.
So, Camp Staple from now on.
Camp Staple. Yeah. There you go.
Love it. Well, we could have fun all day long, but that's not really why we're here. We're here to have
No having fun. That's the rule. Now we're going to get serious. Yeah. There's no fun in youth work.
Yep. That's me. Serious, serious boss coming in. We're going to jump into our topic. The reason why we're getting together today is to talk about this idea of really how to be pursued while pursuing everyone else. This is something that hits home for, I think, all of us sitting around the circle right now, but it's stuff we're also hearing for Dusty and I in our roles with NNYM as we talk with other leaders. They're isolated, they're lonely, and they don't know really what to do because of that. They feel like they're pursuing other people. So that's why we brought Tim. That's why we brought you in. We heard about this, your story, and we'd love to talk with you about that and your experience and your expertise in this as you've lived through this. So it might be good to begin this whole topic to define the idea of pursuit and what that looks like from your experience, Tim.
Yeah, I had the same question about the word when you guys invited me so graciously to do this podcast with you, how to be pursued while pursuing. And I thought I knew what you meant, and I do. I just think sometimes it may be confusing when you think about being pursued. Because I'm afraid that if we wait, if that's what we're saying, if we wait for somebody to seek us out or pursue us or chase us, and invest in us, we might be waiting a long time.
Yeah.
People are busy. People are apprehensive. People are sometimes afraid, I think, to get involved or be transparent or be authentic. And that's, I think, a growing problem, especially among the young people we serve. But I think in the last few years, and so we have youth workers out there who are, they're just above millennials themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. They're caught in a culture where fake or artificial is the norm.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, we have come to prefer artificial. I don't think that's unusual, and nor do I think it's new. I think we have preferred the lie or preferred artificial since the Garden of Eden. There were two trees in the garden we could choose from. We preferred the lie. We chose the lie.
Yeah.
The question I wonder is, do we still choose the lie? And how does that affect people pursuing us or us being pursued if we don't, I guess I would use the words, get naked, get vulnerable, be real? And are we willing to do that? And are we willing to actually let people see us in that state?
That's really good. So for you and your story, there was a turning point. You had a realization that you were alone.
Yeah.
Walk us through that moment, what that looks like, how that even played out, and then also what happened from that.
Well, I wish I could say that my story took a turn quickly, but I'm a slow learner. I don't know about you, but I can be stubborn and afraid. I guess sometimes when you put your heart out there and people don't treat your heart with care or kindness, you learn to keep it to yourself.
Yep.
And my story's long. So I have a lifetime of alone. And I still struggle with it. And so, I mean, I wrote a book on it, and but that doesn't mean you've conquered it. It just means you're willing to be honest with people so they realize that they're not alone. It's really funny because when I ask students in gatherings, like, how many of you have ever felt alone? Every hand goes up. Then I ask them to look around and help them to recognize that since every hand's up, you're not alone. And it's kind of an irony.
Yeah.
And right. But yet it's a comforting irony to the students we work with and to those listening. That idea of the loneliness of leadership, we'll talk about that a little bit. But my transition or my growing out of aloneness, I think took about 20 years to really recognize that's what I was dealing with. I grew up the youngest of four pastor's sons. My dad was a church planter. I lived in 18 homes by the time I was 18.
Wow.
And so I never, and I don't fault my parents for that. I mean, people would think that's how terrible. No, my parents are amazing, sure. Faithful, godly people. And, but because I was on the move constantly to new school, new house, new church, new community. I never knew that I belonged, even though I had a loving home and great siblings. I was always fitting in. Fitting in is fake. Fitting in is artificial. Fitting in is not authentic. And fitting in is surviving.
So that sounds like to me, I mean, I got the chance this week to kind of read your intro to your book. The Alone Sucks, and just how that title came about, that piece right there that you just shared shows a lot more of why I think that hit you, because you did feel that it was maybe forced, and then you have that student in that front row that when they asked.
Yeah, hey, I think God was preparing me. I think God allows us to go through so many things. You know, we would probably all agree on that the circumstances that God uses to shape us for an assignment he has for us later. And so even when I was outlining and halfway through writing Alone Sucks, I just knew that this was way too clinical and not personal. And I called my publisher and said, I'm rewriting the book. He's like, whoa, do you know when, you know, print and drop date is? And I told my wife, I have to write my story in the book. And she immediately said, you can't do that. People will crucify you for your story, which has been amazing, because out of thousands of readers and books, I've never been, at least publicly that I know of, criticized for being honest. People are looking for honest. But I think I recognized, because of my own, like you say, because of my own experience, I could recognize that aloneness in that young man sitting in a front row of a school classroom. Special ed, special needs boy in a mainstream classroom. And when we start talking about the issue of alone, I mean, that's where the title comes from. He just explodes and says, alone sucks. There's not a murmur in the room. And when you talk to people and you get honest and you really begin talking about the issue of feeling alone in ministry, in life, in marriage, in a crowd, no one really second guesses that. They may not want to admit it, which is sometimes frustrating for me, because I think it's the greatest problem of our culture. With more ways to connect than ever before, we are the most disconnected society that maybe has ever existed. Our students certainly feel it. You just read social media posts. People are just saying, notice me, like me, friend me, share me. You know, I want to matter. I don't feel like I do. Why is teen suicide up 72% in the last 10 years? You know, why are we the most medicated generation? even in the midst of our desires to give people a community and a place to belong in the church, why is this generation craving community more than crowds, like we've programmed and planned in the past few decades of youth work? Why are people screaming for attention? Because we're alone. We're alone. But it's hard to admit. And so it's hard to admit sometimes, even though I give free curriculum and resources and tools away on it, sometimes it's hard to get the church to, you know, pick it up and take up the issue or the cause, because as leaders, we would have to admit we're alone too. It's hard to do.
So once you've realized, hey, I'm feeling alone, that's where I think this topic comes in of wanting to be pursued. Like, how do you take that step to get pursued when you realize that? And like you said, it's hard to reach out when you know you're putting your heart out on the line and it's going to maybe hurt sometimes, but how do you actively pursue being pursued, if that makes sense?
I've had the benefit of having some really good mentors in my life. About 20 years ago, I was having lunch with a man who was a Fortune 500 CEO, and I'm blessed enough to have him on my board of directors, or coming on my board of directors. And he asked me, why do you want me to serve with you on this board? Why, you know, what's appealing to you? And I'm sure he's assuming that I think it's, you know, his clout, his status, his finances. And he just said, I promise I will eat your lunch for breakfast. And in 6 weeks, you will regret ever asking me, because I've got nothing to lose by being honest with you and nothing to gain by allowing you to be honest with me. And at that moment, because he said, you need to surround yourself with people who've had their knees knocked out from underneath of them, that don't need anything from you, and that will allow you to be you and speak into your life. Now, that's a hard thing, I think, for many of us to do. We talk about mentoring and having someone disciple us, but God only works in truth and light. God does not work in shadow.
Yeah.
Now, he can work in shadow, but we shed light on everything. And when you surround yourself with somebody who is pursuing you and you're honest with them, they expose, that light exposes your flaws and exposes your weakness and gives you, I mean, to use the theology of the great theologian, Dr. Phil McGraw, right? You can't fix what you don't admit. So you've got to find someone you can admit it to. What's the paradox to your question is that when you realize this issue of, I need help, I'm alone, the loneliness of leadership, or in your household or wherever it might be, the paradox is, in order to be pursued, you still have to be the pursuer. But right, you're having to learn to pursue different things and change your priorities. Many of your listeners are busy. We're all busy, but they're busy planning, preparing, polishing, presenting some kind of youth program, activity, or event that sucks up the majority, if not their life as a whole. By the way, if you're listening, ministry is not who you are.
Come on.
It is what you do.
Right.
And unfortunately for me, and I'll admit this, and maybe for you guys, there's been times where you've got your identity from your title, your identity from your job description, your identity from the applause and the accolades that come with some kind of measured success of ministry.
So
that's unfortunate. It's not who you are. It's what you do. And so you have to evaluate whether you're getting your identity from your vocation.
Yeah, I want to definitely jump in on that. There's so much richness, and I don't want to just drive past a lot of the things you said, but to jump in specifically right there, and then I'm going to go back just a little bit to make sure our listeners, identified a couple of things as I was writing down what you were saying was one right now, jumping on that, two things. The number one reason why I can't get people to even come to a network meeting is because they literally say, I don't have time. That's the number one excuse. And basically what they're saying out loud and they don't know is basically, I don't have time for relationship. I don't have time for, I don't have time to be pursued. I don't have time. I'm too busy pursuing everything else that I don't really need to be pursued. Now they might not use the semantics that way, but it can come across that way if they're not careful. And I'm just going to give you a quick story is I literally, the first network meeting I planted, for some reason felt like God was just saying, hey, Dusty, I want you to, we're going to ask everyone to introduce themselves, but with just their name and what they do outside of their ministry, no title, no church, no nothing. And the first person I looked at and I said, hey, let's just do that. And we'll start here. The first three people couldn't even answer. They didn't know how to answer. And they finally, the first guy was like, I don't even know what to say. And from that moment on, it started a foundation for that group of that community of youth pastors to say, it's not about our title. It's literally about us. And I credit all that to the glory of God because I was not smart enough to come up with that on the fly for sure. Two things I want to go back to is you were speaking on, we had our last guest that we had, we had a guest who quoted this basically saying in his ministry, he had come to a realization. It was like, going to be fake or was I going to be transparent? And he literally said, I had to err on the side of transparency. And so I think that so many times transparency brings fear. I think you use the word crucify. Your wife even said they're going to crucify you for your story. And when I see people err on the side of transparency, it's so refreshing. But something I really wanted to pull out was that you talked about when you were talking about if you wait to be pursued, you're going to wait a really long time. And yeah. The word intentional comes to my mind.
Yes.
So unpack that word intentional when it comes to being pursued and what that looks like.
Well, I want to back up before I answer the word about intentional and talk about inadvertent.
Mm.
None of us entered ministry or leadership to find ourselves in a hole of aloneness. We have every good intention, right? So you have intentions, inadvertent and intentional. So our intentions are never to be in this position. And so it's embarrassing. No one ever said, I want to be an addict.
You know, right.
I want to be a workaholic. I want to alienate my spouse. I want my kids to think that my office is where I live, you know, not my bed. None of us set out to do that. And if we're honest, we're all going to trip into that hole at some point. Mm. And sometimes that hole's so deep that we can't get out. We inadvertently got there. So let's make sure that people are listening. We're not throwing stones or criticizing anyone. We're in this conversation, we're trying to be authentic.
Right.
But we do have that fear because authenticity isn't often valued, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to talk about this issue of value in a minute, but the only way to get out of an inadvertent situation is to make some very difficult, intentional choices. If I'm overweight, if I'm diabetic, if I smoke three packs of cigarettes a day or whatever the issue might be, if I'm mean and cruel and my language is anything but loving and lifting to people and I'm aware of it, either I became aware of it or somebody made me aware of it, I have to make the choice to create a different consequence. Mm. Life's about choices. Choices have consequences, and consequences produce chaos.
Yeah.
But chaos isn't where we began. We began with a simple choice, and inadvertent decisions are usually small steps in the wrong direction or pursuing the wrong things, even for the right reason.
Wow, that's good.
And so in order to get back out of that, I need to choose different things for a better reason. What is my long-term goal? And I think I found myself in a lot of short-term, long-term problems for short-term gain. Mm-hmm. And fitting in. I make short-term decisions to do whatever it takes to make a friend and to get people to like me. Come on, we don't just do that when we're teenagers. We do that when we're 45, right?
Right.
Sometimes we look in the mirror and you're still 16 at heart and you're still making 16-year-old decisions, but we're better at pretending. We're better at faking it. And we're better at hiding, but that doesn't mean we're better. We still are that adolescent self who's longing to be pursued. And no one will pursue us to at least pretend, you know. It's a trap. It's a trap. But going back to something you'd said, Dusty, we have time for what we choose to have time for. We always have time for what we choose to have time for. I've skipped network meetings. I've skipped ministerial association meetings. I have said in the last 3 months that I don't have time for that. It doesn't feed me. It doesn't fill me up, right? So there can be a meeting going on while I'm still having lunch at my desk. I have not got this mastered. And so I have to remind myself that I'm going to make time for what I value. The difficult thing sometimes in ministry is what we should value is not always valued in the church. And what we measure is really what we value. So if we measure attendance, it's because people value us for a larger crowd.
Right.
I'm working on a new teaching course, and somebody suggested that I should name it something about doubling your youth group. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. That is the trap. That is the problem. That is why we're burnt out and, you know, we're sucked dried like a sucked dried juice box. We're just empty, man. Mm-hmm. And because we're always trying to do more and bigger and wider and broader instead of deeper. And deeper is a relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And which we would really be amiss if we did not deal with the elephant in the room and admit that sometimes the last thing we pursue is our relationship with Christ in ministry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes the only time we're in God's word on a consistent basis is when we're prepping for a lesson or a sermon. That our devotional life doesn't stand alone. It's always, you know, in preparation for something else.
On that point, I know you talked with Dusty a little bit about this the other day on the phone. Being pursued by somebody pouring into us is important, but we've also got to pursue God. And you mentioned kind of this idea that us in ministry, we lack at doing that at times because it feels like work. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, about 3 years ago, I chose to be a 5 a.m. person. I'm not naturally a 5 a.m. person. And matter of fact, last night, I'm still jet lagging a bit from Alaska. I was laying there, it's midnight, I finally am falling asleep. I'm older than you guys, so like 9:30 is bedtime, you know? And
same.
At the latest. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, my phone rings. It's one of my sons flying home from Kenya, just letting him know he's safe in Amsterdam and catching his next flight. And so I can't fall back asleep. I'm laying there and I said, God, I am not getting up at 5 a.m. this morning to spend time with you. And I didn't. And I can excuse it and I can justify it. Like, you know, my sleep is off and I was woken up in the middle of the night. I'll just tell you that I'm going to struggle with strength and energy today, not because I'm tired, but because I didn't draw from it by pursuing Christ this morning.
That's good.
My first prayer time today was with you guys. I didn't begin my day in prayer. I'm not going to lie about it. you know, and pretend to be I'm more spiritual because, you know, you're interviewing me. That's a struggle. So I have to choose when that alarm goes off. So after a couple of years of getting up every morning or trying to get up every morning at 5 a.m., my body clock just took over and it became easier. Now, I don't do it every day, but I have learned to love it and long for it. And when I make excuses, or I mean, I could be on vacation or whatever it might be, and I may not be as, you know, consistent. But those inconsistent times, I pay the price for that. And so then I find myself working in my own strength and working in my own power. And then here we go to the cycle, pretending that I've got it together.
Yeah.
Pretending that I can do it, you know. And here's what's sad. After almost 30 years of youth work in ministry, I'm a good faker. I can actually pull off a sermon or a lesson or an event, and you don't know that I'm doing it in my own strength, and I'm not going to admit that to anybody except to everyone listening to this podcast, right? Sure. And so that's the trap, that's the cycle. And again, the only way we get out of that inadvertent hole of aloneness, now listen, we should not be surprised that aloneness is probably one of our greatest struggles. Matter of fact, I would actually call the loneliness of leadership is a self-inflicted wound. And so people do host seminars and, you know, write books on the loneliness of leadership. I choose to be alone. I choose to be in an office. I choose to be at a desk. I choose to tackle it by myself. I choose to chalk off everything on my list and not equip or empower people to do it and train them to do it. Which really what leadership is. Leadership means releasing other people's potential. And if I would choose to spend time with them and help them become what God designed them to be, you know what I wouldn't be? I wouldn't be alone.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's what it means to pursue. Preaching them. That's what it means to pursue others. And when I pour into somebody else for their own benefit, but I do it in relationship, in collaboration, I'm the one who wins. I mean, they may become something that God designed from the very beginning, but it's that relationship, because God is a relational God, and that community that he showed us from the very beginning is what we crave and what we need. And so there's no excuse for being alone. I mean, except if you're in a church that requires like 40 hours of desk time a week.
Sure.
Quit and find a different church. You know, find a different ministry of people who understand that lives are changed through relationships. Period. And relationships that change lives take time. So the question as we wrap is real simple. Where are you spending your time? And if you find yourself spending your time alone, I mean, once again, it's a self-inflicted trap. So just manage your time differently, and you will actually have a better ministry with people. And you won't suffer as much from this idea that no one cares, no one's pursuing me, I'm always the one pouring into and pursuing somebody else. It's just a matter of flip-flopping priorities.
Right. Yeah, and I, you know, you had brought up the thing a while back in your conversation, just talking about how this whole idea of pursuit that we tend to, and Nick even touched on it, we tend to not almost even pursue Christ as much as we pursue the programs and the kids and everything else. I remember when I first started ministry, the guy mentoring me said, the one thing you have to promise me for as long as you do ministry is that you never do your quiet time or your study time just to write a message.
Yeah. Great advice. God bless that guy.
He said, do not rob God by just coming to him for a message. And that has stuck with me for almost 10 years. And I, like you said, I appreciate that knowledge. I hope that anybody listening, same thing, man. Just if I could pass on something just personally from this, which was brought out of your words, Tim, was that came back to me. And while you were talking about that, was don't rob God from that. Don't rob God from that.
Yeah, our message and our ministry should come out of that relationship, and it'll be sweeter and richer than anything you've prepared for. As a matter of fact, here's the beauty of that. that's where people will see your authenticity.
Mm. Yeah.
No matter if your message is good, bad, ugly, or exceptional, what they will hear is your heart for God in the midst of your words, even if they are not properly formed.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. I love that. With the whole, I had a pastor and a mentor tell me as well, like this whole idea between offensive and defensive study, right? And you've said it, you've touched on it. We've all talked about it where the defensive study being when we're preparing for, to give a message to a group, and offensive is when we're doing it alone. No one else knows about it. We're just doing it ourselves. And I feel that in myself. You talked about this strength. I'm a morning person by nature, and I cherish the routine that I have in the mornings where I get in the word, and I can tell after a while, if I choose not to get up and do it, after a while, that strength, I'm going like, it's depleted. Where's it at? I miss it. And then I get back into it and I'm going, why did I ever stop doing this? And so yeah. You know, all of that I resonate with. So practically, some of the stuff, Tim, that you have talked about and maybe you've journeyed through, we know there's somebody listening to this right now that they're going, that might be me. That's me. I've said that. So obviously getting into the word, but what are some things also that you journeyed through where you realized I need to make time for this because this made me not feel alone. Where were some things that you practically got into that helped that?
Practical application for someone that's hearing this and identifying that in themselves.
The first and probably the most difficult thing is you're going to have to get out of your comfort zone because, you know, we learn to be, I guess, comfortable in our hiding. It's not necessarily solitude as much as it's isolation. We create this space that, you know, no one can touch us and no one can hurt us in. And you're going to have to choose to be vulnerable. You have to choose to find somebody. And listen, you got to be careful who you talk to. Hmm. I mean, just the reality is not everyone's going to understand that. Someone thinks you should have it all together and you never have problems. You're a youth pastor, right? You know, you're hyper spiritual.
Come on.
But as we're teaching by example, the generation below us, we're modeling those behaviors that someone is going to pick up and run with. We have to model that vulnerability. The first, and the, I mean, there's not a list. I don't have a list of 15 things to do. It's real simple. If you want to remove your aloneness, you have to first remove someone else's aloneness.
Hmm.
What I chose to do, and I still choose to do, is I look at people around me that when you can recognize those characteristics and those traits in somebody else who are struggling with isolationism or aloneness, invest in their life. Invest in their life. You will immediately be connected to somebody, and by serving them, like Jesus said, I didn't come to be served, but to serve. So think about that in the issue of pursuing, right? Mm. I didn't come to be pursued, but to pursue. But he's pursuing people who needed him, and he took away that removes our aloneness. But secondly, I mean, while you're looking for somebody who needs you, and I think, well, okay, all our students need us. There's somebody that God has placed in your world, and so begin praying about it. Not to say like, okay, no, we're finally going to talk about prayer. Begin praying about it. God revealed to me somebody in my world that I can trust. Hmm. That again has nothing to lose, and nothing to gain.
Right.
By allowing me to be authentic with them and open up a door for that relationship. I would make that my number one priority, regardless if you are listening and feel alone or not. You're going to someday. Mm. You will someday. And you got to recognize it's coming, and it's called prevention, right? Prevention is worth what, a pound of cure or something like that? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure? Mm. Start right now and make a goal. Today, write it down and begin praying, God, put one person in my life. Now, I would say this, that's not my wife for me. I needed somebody besides my spouse.
Okay? Yeah.
I mean, she is that person for me, but I needed additional people. I have about four. None of them live around me. And that's on my priority. As a matter of fact, I did it just 2 days ago. As soon as I hung up the phone with one of my accountability partners, I just made myself a little Siri reminder. Remind me in 30 days to call him back. But I'm not waiting for the call. Don't wait. Don't wait for the call. Be the pursuer in order to be pursued.
That's good. Yeah. And you brought up your spouse. It's almost not even fair to them to have to carry all that weight.
It's a burden, man. Your spouse is already carrying weight. There's already enough unspoken pressure as a youth ministry or ministry spouse that you know they feel. And so you want them to listen, you want them to empathize, but at some point, you know, I don't tell my wife all my pains and all my problems because she shouldn't have to bear all that. But careful, because you also can't hide it, because that's when you get in the hole.
It's a balance.
And depression and anxiety and everything else follows that. So it is a balance. I'm not saying don't confide in your spouse, but have somebody additional to carry that weight with you. Somebody older than you, somebody more experienced than you, and somebody who's walked in your shoes. And they don't have to be in the neighborhood. They can be across the nation.
I know the three guys that I go to the most often, more often than not, whatever they tell me and I come home and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe this, I miss this, my wife will always say, I've been telling you that for months. And it's not that I'm not listening to her. It's that having that outside perspective that, like you said, someone older, someone who's been there, to say, hey, did you catch this again? Driving that point in from two, three angles, then my slow brain finally picks it up.
Yeah, that's a great word. I mean, how many times, it's no different than you speak to students all day long, every week, trying to teach something about God's word. Somebody else, some guest speaker you bring in, comes in, and all of a sudden they're brilliant and they're wondering why they hired you, right? And so it's the same thing, that outside voice, that outside perspective sometimes just gives us a different reality. So that's, yeah, you're right on the money there with that, Nick.
Well, this conversation has been so fruitful and so filling for me. Man, I feel like we could sit here all day and just listen to you, Tim, and just as you pour out your wisdom and the stuff that you've learned and, you know, potentially the missteps that you've made to help guide us. And we're so grateful for you and grateful for your time to come and sit with us so that we can tell other people about it. And so thank you. Thank you so much for that. Dusty, is there anything else any other questions you have?
No. Nick,
anything?
I think to end, just to end is something that really hit home, if I have to say, I mean, so much wisdom, Tim, again, but what you measure is what you value. And I think that so many times in youth work, it doesn't even matter if you're bivocational, it doesn't matter if you're full-time, doesn't matter if you've done it for 1 year or 20 years, that we can get caught up on this whole measurable trap, as you called it. And then we lose value in other things. And so thank you for all the great, great tidbits, but that one, I think hit me right in the heart. So I appreciate that.
Well, just to follow up on that, if it's not measurable, it's not meaningful, right?
True.
Now, I do believe that, but again, we know that lives are changed through relationships. Relationships are hard to measure. Discipleship's hard to measure, but that's what we're called to do. So we have to find ways to measure effective and healthy relationships, which means some things we've been measuring and putting our time into, we need to stop doing in order to invest in the right things. So thanks. I mean, guys, I appreciate you listening. I'm not an expert. I've been doing it longer than maybe most of you and people listening. That just means I've made more missteps and mistakes along the way, and I have no reason not to share them because I don't want to see anyone deal with the aloneness that they don't have to deal with in ministry and in leadership.
Well, Tim, thank you for spending time with us today. We have all benefited from your wisdom, and I'm confident that, that will be true in the future as well. And before we sign off, we have a few things to tell you, our listener, about that we're really, really excited about. Tim has generously made a special code for you to receive 25% off your order from his websites, timothyeldred.com and uequip.com. All you have to do is enter NNYM25 for the entire month of April to receive this discount. We want this podcast to be a free refill for you, the youth worker, but we also want to hear from you as well because we know you have a lot to say. So write us an email at freerefillspodcast@nnym.org. We also have a way for you to be with other youth workers like we talked about in this episode in your area. Go to our website, nnym.org, to find a community of youth leaders near you today. We are better together because we are not alone. And be sure to check out the show notes for all the information mentioned today, so that you didn't miss anything. And if you heard something today that inspired you, help our show grow by sharing it with another person, rating or leaving a review of the show in the iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All of this helps this community grow. And remember, the more you pour into yourself, the more you will be able to pour out to others. Peace.